Okay, so I think we left off in Parakeh. Ufi erach golo otzar yira shehechen lo adam, kein alzeha erach yuchal likonis l'shtamer l'skayim besocho tvuls ha-Torah kepir sher yachzik otzar. We finished last time referencing a mashal that the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Lamed Aleph, brings in the name of Reish Lakish, that Torah and its relationship to yira shamayim is as follows. Yira shamayim, the Pasuk says, is the otzar. It's the storehouse. It's the place which is machnes the Torah. When a person learns Torah, when a person connects to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Torah, so in Parakei of Shardad, when a person learns Torah, so there is a force, there is a substance that can be internalized. But every internalization requires there to be some place to store, some place to put that which is being internalized, right? So it's not simply enough that I'm a human being, and by definition I'm a kli kibul. That's not necessarily the case. A person's yir shamayim is the measure for how much they are kli kibul, how much they can be a receptacle, right? If you have a desk, so you can take a bottle of water like this and pour, and it'll keep flowing, but at some point it's just going to flow over the edges because there's nothing holding it in. So when a person learns, they may process the intellectual side of what they're doing, but the extent to which it actually stays with them and affects them and changes them is the extent to which the person is able to receive it. We're in a tekuva now of Kabbalah Satorah. We've said many times, Kabbalah Satorah means that I have to take it, I accept it, right? So when you take something, you hold on to it, right? Otherwise, if someone just throws something at you and you don't put out your hands to receive it, so then it bounces off of you and it rolls away. So Yir Shamayim is the tool by which a person creates that otzer, by which a person is able to hold on to that which he gets through his limud Torah. When the father, who's the farmer, he's distributing the crops that were grown in the field. So each one of his sons comes with his truck to pick up whatever he needs to pick up, to bring to his family, to eat, to bring the wheat home, to make flour, to make bread. So this one has a big truck, and this one has a little truck. He can only give them as much as they are able to transport. So on the one hand, Afim Yirta'av, the father can be very generous. The other P'suchli Tein Lo Harvei, he wants to give each son a tremendous quantity. Okay? Omnam Kivin Shabenin Yochal Akabel Yoser. But if the son cannot get any more than what he already has, his truck can only hold so much. So the father can no longer give him any more than what will fit. And on the opposite side of the spectrum, if the son comes, he doesn't have a truck at all. All he brought with him was a little plastic bear from the supermarket. So what's he going to be able to take with him? How much can he hold in his hands? Let's try to break down the translation of this paragraph, because I think it's very substantial. He says, Hashem is yado psucho kivyachol. His hand, as it were, is open. Right? When we say every morning in Ashrei, it says in Halacha, Poseach Zedecha Masbil Chol Chai Rotzon, a person has to have the meaning of that sentence in mind when they recite the words of Ashrei. And if not, if they go a few psukim beyond and they realize, or they finish the parak and they realize they didn't concentrate on the meaning of those words, the Halacha is you have to go back, say it with Kavanah, right? Throughout Pesukah Zimmer, there's no other line that's ma'akiv like that. This is one line you have to have in mind. The translation. Usually, we assume on a pashup shot level, makes sense. You open your hands and you provide the needs and the desires of every living thing. Here, on a different level, Nevi Shachaim says yado psucha. Hashem's hand is open to provide in a different way, not to provide sustenance and parnasa and that which we request in our tefillos, which is the subsequent intent of the rest of the parak, right? Korov Hashem l'chol korov l'chol asher yikru v'emes. That's why we always recite Ashrei before Shemon Esrei. It always has to be an Ashrei before Shemon Esrei, before Shacharis, before Mincha, before Musaf. Marv is different, Marv is Rishos, but otherwise we always have an Ashrei in there. So what is the kavana? So Karov Hashem Uchol Korah, because when we want to introduce tefillah, we want to introduce our approach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with a reminder, Karov Hashem Uchol Korah, Uchol Shekhar V'Mas. If I reach out to Hashem, if I communicate with Him, He is close to me, He's listening, He's paying attention. Ritzon Hashem Yirev. Next pasuk is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do my Ratzon, the Ratzon of Yerei Shemayim. Hopefully we're Yerei Shemayim. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will fulfill our Ratzon. So that's number one. He wants to bestow upon each and every member of the Am Segula, Kal Yisrael, Rov Chach, Mobin Yaseir, not just Parnas and Gashmis, but also an abundance of wisdom and deep understanding. And he wants it to remain with them. Meaning, he wants them to be able to take it home in a truck, not in your hands, not in a grocery bag. Yikrim Aluach Libam, to tie them to the palate or the slate of one's heart. In the mashal, the pasuk, kasvam aluach libecha l'shtashea itam bevoam l'olam hamenucha v'samudam biyadam, in order that they should delight in it and take it with them, tamudam biyadam, when they go to the l'olam hamenucha, to olam haba, it should be something everlasting. That's what a person takes with them that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestows upon them. But Hashem can only endow a person with wisdom if he prepares a place to store it, right? At some point, even on a physical level, a person's mental capacity can only hold so much. There's information overload. You're sitting in a class for too long, and the teacher just keeps talking and talking and talking. At some point, you know, you just need a break to process it. That's why it happens to be in Parshas Vayikra. There's a Rashi. Rashi notes that as Hashem lists all of the karbonos, Parshas Vayikra goes through the Ola and the Shlamim, etc., all the different kabbalas, the Chatas, and gives all the details. Constantly, you find interrupting at different points blank space, right? Parsha Psucha, where there is there's an interruption. If you look at the cloth of the Torah, there'll be space there where no words are written. In a Chumash, you'll see the Pei, you'll see the Samach. Just right over here, and just opened up to Vayikra Perek Beis. There's a Samach after Pas Gimel. Then there's another one after Dal. There's another one after. There's another one not so much after that, but a little bit of space after Pas Gimel. It's very unusual to see so many breaks. Another one after Tezayin, a few psukim later. Then another one, five psukim later. Constant breaks. So Rashi says, Litain Revach bin Parshal. Parshal is morning. Moshe Rabbeinu was educated about these deep matters of the Karbonos, but Hashem was, you know, as the information was coming, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took a break and let him contemplate, let him process the information that he was provided before going on to something new. Obviously, there's a lesson for us that when you're communicating, but also when you're on the receiving end, you need to just take a breath and take it all in. So you have to have a place to store it that's able to hold on to what is conveyed. Torah is a metaphysical acquisition. Brain cells are not sufficient because it's not just the information. You also need your shemaim. In the same way you need brain cells and a clarity of mind to process that which you're taught, the spiritual side, what comes through with Torah, needs to have a place to contain it. And that is Yerushalayim. That is the Otsa that the Pasuk describes as Yerushalayim. Harei Mavur. This is, by the way, he says this is the Pshat in the Pasuk. Reishis Chachma Yerush Hashem. Reishis Chachma Yerush Hashem. So Reishis refers to the very first step, the beginning. Maybe even the prerequisite. The prerequisite for Chachma to even get off the ground, to start learning and understanding is Yerush Hashem. So we know that Pasuk, it's one of the first Pesukim you teach a child, Reishis Chachma Yerush Hashem, right after they say Moda Ani in the morning. Hari Mavur Shagam Yiri Hi Mitzvah Achas. The Pasuk says that Yira, there's a Eshashem Al Kach Tira, it's a mitzvah to have Yira Shemayim. And the Yerushalmi tells us that all mitzvahs in the Torah, 612 of them, do not measure up to the one greatest mitzvah, which is the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. So on the one hand, we know, right, like we say in Peah, it's in our Siddur in the morning after Brachas Torah, Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam means every other mitzvah can only it serves its own purpose and can garner its own schar, but doesn't add up to what Torah equals. However, when it comes to mitzvahs k'nias hayir mimen yizbarach rabbi himaud mitzachi mukhrachas leikra kim v'shimra torah hakadosha ubilta gam nim eses chasjom v'nei abriyos chin tzricha shetikdam etal adam kodem esek ator. He says there is one exception that doesn't really follow the same set of rules, as it were. There is one mitzvah out of the 612 other than Talmud Torah which rises above the rest, and that is Yir Shamayim, because the mitzvah to be Kona Yir Shamayim, Rabbi Himaod, it is very great, and it's absolutely necessary for the Kiyum and the Shimur of the Torah Kedosha. So, again, we're putting Torah head and shoulders above every other mitzvah, but we're saying that that doesn't take away from the fact that you still cannot achieve that mitzvah that you're putting on this pedestal. We had a different mitzvah, Yir Shamayim, and it cannot be ignored. It's reminiscent of an explanation Rabban Cutler gave, I believe, as to why it is that the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva died at this juncture. And again, we know Lashon Chazal is that Shalonagu Kovet Zebezeh. They did not treat each other with respect. Now, that's obviously a serious business. It's obviously very important. However, it still doesn't quite mesh with our understanding of the severity that would warrant such a serious punishment and such a serious response that so many of them had to die, and so many of them had to die at the same time. There's clearly a message over here that goes beyond just, you know, respect each other. There's something more than that. So what's the pshat? So Aaron Cutler said that we have to just bear in mind the context over here. Rabbi Kiva's Talmidim, after they died, after Rabbi Kiva's Talmidim died, what happened? It says that Rabbi Kiva came to the south of Eretz Israel, and he found five new Talmidim. And those new Talmidim ended up serving as the foundation for all the Torah Shabbat that we have, right? If entire generation of scholars were wiped out, 24,000 Talmidim, so the next five that Rabbi Kiva started with must have been the ones that laid the groundwork for the rebuilding of Torah. Agav, that's why we make such a big deal about Lag BaOmer. The celebratory aspect of Lag BaOmer, right, sounds a little bit funny to be celebrating the deaths, right? I know we don't think of it as a celebration of that death, but what exactly are we marking? Oh, they stopped dying. Hooray, they stopped dying. What's the, you know, you can breathe a sigh of relief, but usually when someone stops dying, you start shiva, right? I guess it's not exactly the same thing. When an epidemic is over, of course, there's cause for celebration. But isn't there mourning there? So the answer is, what we're celebrating in Lag BaOmer is the rebuilding. The fact that Rabbi Kiva didn't just call it quit and say, you know, like, my life's work has gone down the drain, you know, I don't know, let someone else pick up the pieces. No, he didn't wait to restart his efforts and rebuild all over again. That was the mistake of Noach, according to many Mefarshim, that he left the Teva and he saw this world that was completely empty. And you can imagine how depressing that was. There was a world, there was a society, there was civilization, and now it was just profound emptiness. And it was so depressing that what is the first thing he do? He does, he gets drunk and just sort of, you know, tries to deal with his shock of leaving the Teva like that. And on the contrary, what he was supposed to do was, what's the pasuk right after Noach? Lech lecha. You get up and you keep moving. That was the difference between Noach and Aaron. What does Noach mean? Noach's mom is the opposite of lech lecha. Noach is just, I'm going to stay put. I'm going to take it easy. And, you know, like, maybe someone else is going to pick up the pieces, but I'm done. I witnessed failure. I told you a story once. I heard this from Rabbi Eitan Feiner. Very, very powerful story about Rav Nassen Sherman, the editor of Art School. So I believe he once was at the hospital visiting someone who was sick, and then someone else, there was another patient in a different room who heard that he was there, and he asked him, could you come into the room? And he didn't really remember the patient, but the patient insisted that that they went to camp together, that Rabbi Sherman was his counselor or something like that. And he said, Rabbi Sherman, it's because of you that I'm still alive. I've been battling cancer for several years now, but it's all because of you that I'm still here. So he said, I don't even know you. What do I do? So he said, when I was a kid, and we were playing softball in camp one day, and you know, I was up. You were the counselor. You were the umpire. You were calling the game. And I got up there, and I swung, and it was like a little dribbler to the shortstop, and it looked like it was going to be an easy play. So, you know, I made it halfway down the first baseline, and then, you know, I turned around and started going to the dugout. And then the throw comes from shortstop, and it goes to the first baseman, and the first baseman misses it, and the whole team's like, run, 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 you'll be safe, you know. And at that point, I was already, back with the team. But I got back on the field and I ran to first base and I made it before they made the throw. And you called me out anyway. I said, what do you mean? I was safe. I got there first. It was an error. I got there first. He said, you're out. A Jew never stops running. And he said, because of that message you left me with when I was 10 years old, I'm here and I've been battling and I haven't given up and I'm not going to give up because our whole life is about maybe there's failure, but we're just going to pick ourselves up and keep going. That was Rabbi Kiva. That was that's what Lag BaOmer is about. It was about the next step. That Rabbi Kiva lost everything, but said, this is my mission, because Baruch Hu wants me to accomplish this, that I need to start right here and right now, put everything behind me, and have a new beginning. So, but it still doesn't take away from that. Why did Rabbi Kiva lose those Talmidim? So what Rabbanan explained is, if the new Talmidim were the ones who served as the basis for the Mishnayos and the Brises and the Toseftas and so forth, so the last 24,000 Talmidim were obviously originally intended to serve that role as being the ones who would continue the Masorah, take Rabbi Kiva's tradition and move it on to the next generation. So even though a standard, so to speak, transgression in Ben Adam L'Chavero is not going to bring about the same type of reaction, same type of punishment as the Talmidim of Rabbi Kiva, but for those people, those students, who are going to be the ones to pass on Torah, to represent Torah, to be the ones to convey the Masorah, for them, if they did not comport themselves, if they did not represent that mission with the full, well, I guess we'll say tzura of what a Talmud Chacham is supposed to appear as, and the image that he's supposed to provide, so then the Bein Adam L'Chavero is fatal. Then even simply the way they addressed each other and the way they treated each other in the Beis Medrash, if it doesn't live up to the expectations, then it's taka fatal. And these are the words of Reb Chaim Volozhin. He says, when we talk about the critical need for Yerushalayim, so we describe it as a storehouse, it's the shimur, it's the kiyum, it's what allows Torah to exist. Ubilta gamnim eses chas v'shom v'ini abrios. Without Yerushalayim, if a person doesn't behave like a mensch, doesn't behave like a mensch, you can know all the Torah in the world, you can be a bucky in shas, but Torah will be despised and will be repulsed and will be rejected by those who are watching that, so to speak, Talmud Chacham does not live up to the tzura, to the image and to the form of how Talmud Chacham is supposed to appear. Because you say to yourself, right, everyone knows, from the time you're a little kid and you go on a class trip and the teacher says, oh, you have to make a Kiddush Hashem, what's the point? The point is because the people at the museum, the people on the trip are going to say, oh, this is what people who learn Torah do. And if you make a good impression, so then God looks good. Torah looks good. If you make a wrong impression, so then what's the point of learning? Why should I send my kid to a place where you spend half the day learning and I spend another $30,000 on tuition if you just behave like every other kid in the street? What's the point? So how much more so the ones who would actually convey the Masorah, the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, who would set the stage for the next generation, if they can't be the ideal picture of not just Torah learning and information and the study, but actual Yerushalayim, which projected itself and represented itself and expressed itself in the Bein Adam L'Chavero, that Yerushalayim is missing. It's nimeses be'enei abrios. Torah learning is going to be disgusting in the eyes of those who see an individual acting. That's why the bracha we make on when seeing a Talmud Chacham is asher cholak mechachmasa lireyav. We don't even emphasize the chachma so much, but rather we emphasize the fact that the one who has the chachma is the Yerei Shamayim, because that's really what counts. Just saw a story last night, true story, about an individual who was a Baal Tshuva very late in life. An Israeli, secular Israeli, who at an advanced age became frum. And he showed up to a shul one day. No one knew who he was because he was recently frum. And if a person randomly shows up, especially an older person, and you don't know who he is, so you assume he's there at the yard site, he's saying Kaddish or something like that. He's here today, going tomorrow. Some people didn't think so much of it. They thought, he was just stopping through, and we're not going to see him again. But he came back day after day after day, and eventually the Rav, realized, this is something we should acknowledge and welcome him and find out who he is. So everyone went over to him and asked a little bit about his story, and he told him, I'm a Baal Tshuva, but only recently in my 60s. So he said, well, what inspired you in your 60s to become frum? So he said, I'll tell you. There was a member of the Knesset, I believe, a frum mayor of the Knesset, a frum member of the Knesset. This is all over the news. This is like, you know, this part of the story was well known. A frum member of the Knesset who needed a kidney transplant. And he had, I think, I don't know, 10 children, 12 children, something like that. So they went through the various testing to narrow down which of the children would be a match and could donate the kidney to the father. So there were two sons who were matches, and each one was fighting. This was in the media. They were fighting. Who would have the right to give this great covenant to their father and donate a kidney? And they went to Rebbe Yashiv, and Rebbe Yashiv did a Goral Hagro. You know what the Goral Hagro is, guys? It's al pi Kabbalah. You have to know how to do it. There's a special masorah how to do it. You take a chumash, and you insert a little, or you open up to a random pasuk, and with the proper guidance, and again, you have to know how to read the pasukim, then you can discover what, a little bit of Ruach HaKodesh, what it is that you're supposed to do. But again, there's maybe a small number of individuals in every generation who are privy to know exactly how to do this. And we don't play games with it. So Rabbi Yashiv performed the Goral HaGra, and it came out that one of the sons was going to have the schus to provide the kidney. So he said, not long ago, I also needed a kidney transplant. And obviously, the most likely donors were my own two kids. So I called my son, I called my daughter. I called my son, and my son said, no, you know, I just have a lot of traveling now, and I don't think I'm going to be available to do it. It's a big thing. You have to be sedated, and, you know, it's a big process, and there's recovery time. I'm just not going to be able to do it. He was shocked. He called his daughter. He says, oh, I'm just starting a new semester in school, and, you know, like, I'm just afraid I'm not going to have the energy to be able to, to do my classes and my coursework if I have to go through this operation. And, you know, sorry, Dad, I just can't do it. So then this old man told the Rav, like, I was just shocked. I spent the last 40 years of my life giving every penny to provide everything I could for my children, to show them what's important and educate them and provide for them. And, like, now they have the chance to give back. Like, my life is at stake here. This is a kidney transplant. And they don't have the time of day for me. And then I read this article in the newspaper about the children of this religious member of the Knesset. And I said, if that's what a Torah lifestyle is, then I'm going to turn my back on my entire life and start all over again. Because this is how you bring up a person in a religious environment, then that's for me. That's what I want. And it just goes to show you, Rebbe Chaim is talking about from the opposite extreme, that the Torah is nem eses, but also we should appreciate that there's a tremendous positive force that can also be generated when a person represents Torah and represents the Kodesh Baruch Hu with the right ideals and with the right standards and the right values, that it can be transformative. You know, you usually don't hear of Baal Tshuva stories of that nature, you know, but it can make the difference in anyone's life. And probably the people who were the inspiration for that man will never know, didn't know at the time, and will never know how much they accomplished. They'll come to Shemayim, because Baruch Hu will show them, you know, oh, here's your schar. What do you mean it's my schar? This man who lived another 10 years of his life as a frum Jew, I don't even know who he is. Okay, but it's all because of you. Simply because you acted the way you're supposed to act. The degree to which our schar is measured is not simply, okay, I did a mitzvah, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu rewards me for it. If I was the catalyst, if I was the goer for other mitzvahs, even if I never meet the people who do those mitzvahs, it accrues back to me. And sometimes all you need to do is just be yourself and live up to what it is, the Yiras Shamayim, that Torah requires to be able to accomplish that. And above all, which is the thrust of what we're learning in the first place, is you'll also achieve the status of a Kli Kibul, to accept, to receive, to maintain, sustain everything that the Torah learning that you're doing provides. And that, if anyone asks, is one of the reasons why we try to dedicate a little of our day each day to Musar and make sure that it stays on the radar. We're not only learning Gemara, we need to do it as a precursor to generally the Yiras Shamayim. That's what Rav Chaim's going to talk about. Sometimes necessary before you start learning to reconnect yourself to that aspect that really is the staying power and the preservative as the Gemara uses that mashal of all the hours of Talmud Torah that we dedicate over the course of our years in yeshiva.